Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. We are solo podcasting under the lid of my brand new Got Stockholm Syndrome trucker hat. For those who are listening with your ears, these are the visuals that I hate to say you are missing, because I don't want to start off this podcast in lack. And these are the visuals that are inviting you to go look it up on the internet so that you can nab yourself your very own Got Stockholm Syndrome swag. Before we dive into today's podcast, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment. Even if your comment is like punctuation, I think even that will help trick the algorithm into skyrocketing me to the very top of everyone's feed. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter. Even though I haven't sent out a newsletter in a minute, I am about to, and it is the very best way to ensure that we get to stay in touch, because the whole big tech landscape is very shaky, very fragile. I'm gonna let you guys know if, I don't see it happening, but if they make a push that we need to show like real ID for internet access, I'm out. I'm not doing it. If it's, we need real ID or some sort of photo ID to get on Locals or Odyssey or YouTube or Patreon or wherever you're scoping me out, I am not going to do that. So at this stage of the game, my newsletter is the very best way to ensure that we stay in touch, given all the unknowns that we may or may not be facing. Also reminding you that I do have a product line up at my Threadless shop. I will include the link for this specific trucker hat in the show notes, as well as the link for my entire dannykatz.threadless.com store, where I've been having so much fun creating new products. I think this is my first trucker hat. I'm like not used to it. I actually did my hair, I kind of did it in a style today, which is so rare for me. And then when I turned on the Zoom to record, I realized that with the black background, it like wasn't, you couldn't see it. It didn't look that great. And I'm like, fine, it gives me an excuse to wear my new trucker hat. I remember in college, I dated a baseball player, and all the baseball guys were doing like, they were really like hung up on like shaping their hats in the right way. I don't know if the same thing applies to trucker hats as it does to baseball hats. If anyone has any advice on trucker hat styling, please let me know. But I'm having fun with it. And I remember I did have a trucker hat in fourth grade. My father, the legendary Jerry Katz, went on some sort of trip, and he brought me back a bright yellow, like bright, bright collegiate yellow trucker hat with the butt. It was like a plush butt. Maybe I think it was like a bull's butt, and then like some little brown pom-poms for poop. Yeah, we were real high class, super sophisticated family. Anyway, I wore it to school because anything my dad bought me, I thought was completely amazing, except for the stupid Fonzie suspenders he got me in fourth grade, where I was like, I'm not a baby. Although I had no problem in the same grade wearing the bull butt poop hat. But that was a day where we went to the park for PE, and the hat attracted all these bugs. And I just had like hundreds of little gnats swarming my head, which was already being mocked pretty severely by my classmates. So I don't think I wore it again after that. This is a healing journey for me today. The wearing of the Got Stockholm trucker hat is significant in terms of my acknowledging and integrating of that age-old wound. Thank you for holding space for me. So today's show is going to be highly quantum languaging focused. I have a bunch of examples, so we're just going to dive into them. Where am I going to start? I'm going to start with one of my clients. We are going to call him Emilio just for shorthand ease. And that being said, His name isn't really Emilio, and I would never, ever expose my clients in that way. So just to let everyone know that this is a safe, respectful space. So Emilio and I have been working on him rewriting his relationship with his mother. And what Emilio is bringing to the table is frustration with what he sees as his mother's need to control him and needing for him to be in contact 24/7. Just for the sake of clarity, Emilio is in his 50s and his mother is in her 70s. And apparently what Emilio's mother is taking issue with is that he is weaning himself off of his smartphone. And so he's been moving through his life without taking his smartphone with him, which I completely encourage, admire, and applaud. And his mother is taking issue with the fact that when she calls him, he's not picking up the phone. And so on the flip side of missing her calls, he's getting a lot of grief and guff from his mother, who is lambasting him for not being available 24/7. So of course, we've been working with this in a number of ways in terms of one, not perving our own behavior outside of our own authentic truth to stave off other people's potential disappointment in us. This is actually a through line with all of my coaching clients right now, is transmuting the fear of disappointing other people, which like is never on us to manage, right? I can't disappoint anyone else because I don't have that much power over anyone else. If someone else is cultivating their own expectations of what they want from me, or even just their own desires, and then they're projecting these expectations or these desires onto me, that's on them. And if they're disappointed, that's also on them. This isn't to say that I myself or that I am encouraging my clients to go out of their way to upend other people's projected expectations on us, but it's getting very clear with our boundaries that like we're only beholden to ourselves, to being true to ourselves. Of course, being considerate and respectful of everyone in our lives. But in this instance, Emilio's mother is cultivating an expectation that she's projecting onto him that he is going to be available 24/7 as a like 70 something helicopter parent. And then what we've been working on in our sessions is helping Emilio resist the urge to internalize his mother's projected expectations and projected disappointment. And again, put it in that vestibule that I spoke about in our last podcast of like, okay, his mother's coming at him with a lot of anger, with a lot of projection, with even some name calling. And what I encourage Emilio to do is like put it in the vestibule and just look at it from all angles. And as you leave it there, instead of taking it in, you can see, is this mine? Is this his mother's unintegrated stuff that she hasn't yet integrated or come into harmony with, that she's trying to dump on him but really doesn't belong on him, which ultimately is what he has come to? And then he could just leave it in the vestibule and not really engage his mother from the frequency of her disappointment and all of the venom and invective that she spews when under its rather confusing grips. I'm tempted to pull up the victimhood section of our favorite book, The Language of Betterarchy, to just get into these types of projections. You disappointed me. It's like, you made me feel bad. You abandoned me, right? Like none of these things are ever, ever, ever true. Here we go. I just flipped to the narcissism of victimhood and it feels appropriate. So let's dive into that and then we'll continue unpacking the Emilio's mom situation. Victim consciousness tricks us into believing that outside agencies are acting against us. He made me cry. She effed me over. He misgendered me. She abandoned me. All these statements cast us as lead actors in other people's stories, right? You disappointed me. All these statements cast us as lead actors in other people's stories, implying that we ourselves were front and center of our alleged perpetrators' consciousnesses as they were deliberately trying to hurt us. These statements aren't just inaccurate, they allow us to avoid taking responsibility for our trauma, our triggers, and our shoddy discernment. The narcissism of victimhood has us casting ourselves as lead actors in other people's stories. So were I to mistakenly address someone by the wrong pronoun, we're gonna get into this later, to the person running victim consciousness, it isn't a matter of me being careless or distracted or simply not habituated to using a plural part of speech to represent a singular human. It becomes a microaggression, a deliberate attempt to hurt another person who is not taking responsibility for the unintegrated trauma they're using to victimize and disempower themselves. So this is what happens when we erroneously take responsibility for staving off other people's projected disappointment. What we're doing is we're enabling their victim consciousness. We're enabling the quantum entanglement that would cast us as perpetrators in other people's victim stories. So in this instance, Emilio is just whatever he's doing, going for a hike for the afternoon and choosing to not take his phone as a means of safeguarding the sanctity of his attention and his consciousness. Emilio's mother is conflating his completely independent, autonomous choice and action as an affront against her, right? He's disappointing her. He's avoiding her, right? Because in the victim mind, the victim or whoever's running victim consciousness is this plays the starring role in the world's life, right? We're all just B players, just co-stars to every victim who alleges to hold front and center space in our consciousness and in our lives. The issue is that when we adjust our behavior to either A, avoid quote unquote disappointing someone else, or B, avoid being on the receiving end of whatever, you know, their projected invective is as inspired by victim consciousness, A, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. Like whoever's running victim consciousness, like Emilio's mom, like she is far less interested in what Emilio is doing for himself to safeguard his attention, to safeguard his mind and his consciousness. That is completely secondary to Emilio's mother getting what she wants when she wants it, and not having to deal with feeling disappointment because, and I'm guessing, because I haven't met her, guessing that she hasn't yet cultivated the tools to learn how to deal with the disappointment. And, you know, fair enough, she comes by that honestly. But this is classic codependence, right? Were Emilio to continue to take his phone with him wherever he goes, even though he knows that it's damaging his consciousness, but if he does that just to stave off his mother's projected disappointment, just to stave off the uncomfortable conversations that come along when that confusing disappointment is projected onto him, now he's locked into a completely codependent quantum entanglement with his mommy. And I am absolutely switching up from mother to mommy in that instance, because this is where we get like man boys who haven't really left the nest or established their own autonomy or independence because they're too afraid of disappointing their mommies, right? And this isn't just men, right? This is anyone who's rocking any sort of codependent relationship that is inspired by the desire to avoid disappointing other people as though we have that much power or control over their lives. And so, you know, what I had been advising Emilio to do, and as well as advising all of my clients, is it's okay if other people are disappointed. Like, that's okay. And smarter than tying ourselves into knots so that other people aren't disappointed by our actions, it's way smarter for us us to simply learn to be comfortable in the face of other people's projected disappointments, right? Not only is that infinitely healthier for us in terms of us living authentic lives where we're really loving ourselves and being the best versions of ourselves for ourselves, we're also giving other people the opportunity to heal those unintegrated wounds and traumas by like lending the communication that says, I know that you're a grown up and you can handle the disappointment and you don't need to throw a big baby tantrum on me because I'm not available 24/7. And of course, I'm not advocating that anyone say this. And how are we to, as a collective, raise our emotional intelligence if we are withholding the opportunities that would allow us to raise our emotional intelligence because of projected fears that people around us can't handle it, right? Then we're enabling this emotional retardation and we continue to lower the frequency and lower the emotional intelligence of our collective. So, you know, I see this in so many of the people I work with, and I think it's probably what attracts them to me is that empowerment is like my secret sauce, right? Empowerment, communication, leadership, these are my secret sauce. And so there's no such thing as like empowered codependence. Like that's not a thing. We're either empowered or we're in these codependent bonds, but they don't really flow together, right? So empowerment comes through independence and then some degree of interdependence, right? But interdependence isn't fostered by wounding, right? Interdependence isn't like, oh, I'm in lack, or I have this like old wound or trauma that I haven't dealt with and don't want to deal with, so I'm going to lean on you or cling on to you in this way, right? That's codependence. Interdependence is we come to one another whole and healed and decide, okay, here are the places wherein it feels healthy and aligned for us to depend on one another, but it's not out of like need or lack or wounding. Pause for a sip. And I might have had enough caffeine. We'll see. Let's stick with water for a moment. But there was an aha when I needed to change an appointment time with Emilio. And so I called him and I got his voicemail. And it was like, at this point, I want to listen to all of my clients' outgoing voicemails just to see how those messages are programming everyone in their lives. Because keep in mind, the key issue that we have been dealing with is Emilio's mother's disappointment in him not being readily available when she calls him on the phone. So she calls him on the phone, and instead of getting Emilio, she goes to his voicemail. And here is the message that she was hearing. Hi, you've reached Emilio. Unfortunately, I can't get to the phone right now. Boom, we don't need to hear anymore. That word, unfortunately, is programming everyone who calls Emilio to be disappointed that they are not getting a hold of him in real time. It was such an aha of like, wait, Emilio, here's a place where you can take responsibility and you can make the subtlest shift in how you're languaging your outgoing message and not program everyone who's not getting a hold of you in real time for disappointment by way of the word, unfortunately. Remember, we are writing our own story. Where there's a will, there's a way, tribe. We are making it work. We have had a short tech interruption by way of internet gone offline, gone no more, bye-bye. And now we're back. So thank you for your patience. What I was saying was, the insertion of this singular word, unfortunately, five syllables, were inadvertently and erroneously programming everyone who was trying to get a hold of my client Emilio and who was going straight to voicemail to cultivate negative emotions and to be disappointed when they didn't get a hold of him. So the fix was super simple. in terms of, you know, helping to reorient and rewrite the dynamic with his mother, which was re-record your outgoing message and lose the unfortunately no need to program anyone to believe that just because they're not getting a hold of you when they want to, that that's something negative or bad or reason to be disappointed. And it speaks to a larger communication pattern that I want you and me and all of us to be aware of, which is programming people for how to receive us instead of honoring other people's free will and allowing them to cultivate their own opinions and emotions about whatever it is that we're saying. So another pattern that I've seen is, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who said, look, you're probably not going to hear this, but, and he went on to give me some feedback about my business. Now, first and foremost, it's very hard to offend me, and I take constructive criticism and feedback really, really well. So there was a part of me that thought, like, who are you even talking to that I'm not going to like whatever it is that you're about to say? And why would you program me for that type of like contraction and defensiveness instead of allowing me to have my own authentic process around whatever it is that you might be sharing? So the gist is, it's like this kind of insecurity around how we're going to be received, right? And we come by these insecurities honestly, and it's recognizing that these are vulnerabilities in our communication paradigm, right? And they're also means of programming people for conflict and for emotional dysregulation that don't necessarily have to be there. So our wisest move is not to caveat what we're about to say by telling other people how they may or may not receive it, right? That's stepping outside of our lane and assuming that we're inside other people's heads. You're not gonna like what I'm about to say, but blank. Before the whatever is going to be said leaves the person's mouth, the receiver is already on alert, on the defensive, in a contracted state, right? Cortisol and alert, stand by for insult or something worse, right? It's much wiser to just communicate and allow the other person to cultivate their own response. Whether they're upset, whether they're neutral, whether they're grateful, it doesn't matter. So, you know, I see this a lot with some of the talking heads coming through the screens. Here's an interesting idea. Here's a fascinating perspective. It's like they're programming the audience or the interviewer to perceive them as interesting or fascinating. Again, it's another programming technique where it's like, I'll be the judge of whether what you're about to say is interesting or fascinating or revelatory or any of those things. Like, I can be the judge of that for myself. So, you know, I recognize that some of us are in the habit of like processing verbally, right? I've done this on my podcast many times where I'm about to say something, but then another part of my brain that's overactive has a judgment or opinion on saying that thing. And then I end up sharing like my internal process around it instead of just talking about the thing. I think that people with very active intellects do this. I think air signs do this a lot. So I understand the urge to like, okay, I'm thinking 12 steps ahead as like a strategic forward-thinking person, and I can see various versions of reality wherein this person might take this in this way. Too bad. It's really much wiser to let the chips fall where they may, not muddy the communication with all sorts of preemptive guessing as to how the person may or may not receive it, and thus programming them for like a contracted defensive state. It's much smarter to simply communicate from a neutral place, give people, you know, the freedom and autonomy to respond however they may or may not respond, let the chips fall where they may and have the conversation, right? So I'm inviting you and me and all of us to be mindful of the urge to program other people as to how they're going to receive what it is we're about to say. Just allow people their own free will and allow ourselves to be surprised when they take constructive feedback really well, the way I usually do, right? Or If someone doesn't take the feedback well, then we'll deal with that scenario if and when it presents itself, instead of programming people for the least pleasant scenario as a means of like preemptively protecting ourselves and thus creating the very scenario that we didn't want to experience in the first place. I hope that made sense. I trust that made sense. I trust that made sense because I trust that you are smart and you're with me and you're getting it. And I'm not gonna have the coffee, I'm gonna have the water. All right, so I am getting over myself, fear or self-consciousness around repeating myself on my podcasts, in my videos, et cetera, because as I'm understanding, as I learn more and more from marketing, well, and of course I know this about propaganda, but repetition is how our ideas really land, and it's okay for people to hear ideas more than once. So what I'm about to share is something that I've mentioned before, and because it's so, so prevalent in the media space, and it's so, so damaging and speaking to so many larger issues, I'm sharing it with us now. So I'm gonna do a little short screen share. So I started watching this video this morning, Barry Weiss interviewing Douglas Murray. And look, there are many times where I show up on my podcast, you know, straight from the gym or whatnot, but I'm not enjoying this neckline or this color on Miss Barry Weiss. And no, this is not, this is not a fashion review show. And I think with a color like this, some blush, some lip gloss would be helpful. And I recognize my hypocrisy in the fact that I don't very often have those things on myself. And I'm not liking this neckline on her. But this is not the point of why we're sharing this. So, all right, fair use. We're gonna listen to Barry and then we're gonna unpack it.
Rogan and Dave Smith. But before we get there, I would love just your riff on the so-called woke right. How worried should we be about the illiberalism that's taking root, not necessarily in Washington yet, but certainly in major precincts of the online space? If politics is downstream of culture, how worried should we be about a movement that's increasingly popular that is revisionist in its view of our history and of our...
All right, the rest of it doesn't matter because she said it twice. How worried should we be? So one of the primary issues that the internet land is having with Douglas Murray, who is shot to completely new quantum levels of fame following his Joe Rogan, Dave Smith podcast. So one of the biggest issues that at least people in my bubble and my feed and my realm are having with one Douglas Murray is this exaggerated arrogance, this propping up of these so-called expert classes, of which Douglas Murray is actually not a part of with his English Lit bachelor's degree, and how we should all be kowtowing to what the expert class is telling us to do. So this is an example of that kind of distorted, demented, totally outdated, antiquated paradigm, wherein the plebs need to defer to what the expert class is telling us to do by way of this completely erroneous question that I hear various talking heads, so-called journalists, spokesholes, news anchors asking to their guests who are being propped up as the experts that in the case of Douglas Murray, they are not, is how worried should we be? So she's not asking Douglas, what is your take on the seeming ramping up of the illiberalism coming from the woke right? How do you see this going? What are some of the dangers that you're seeing in this growing movement, right? And I'm just paraphrasing in terms of Barry's perspective, I don't know that there's a woke right movement. You know, I don't know that any of this is even organic. But instead of asking Douglas Murray, who is a columnist with a bachelor's degree in English literature, instead of asking his opinion on this cultural trend that we're all witnessing, she is putting herself on a lower rung of the ladder, putting Douglas Murray above all of us and saying, oh, hey there, expert who's, you know, operating in some high degree of human supremacy, how worried should the rest of us plebs be? How much of this particular negative emotion that I am feeding you as an interviewer, how much of this totally negative, totally damaging emotion should we, the people, be cultivating in our bodies because of your assessment of this situation? Because we're too stupid to mind our own emotional state for ourselves. So we need you, the so-called fake expert, to tell me and my audience how much of this negative emotion that I'm feeding you to be embodying. Do you see how demented this question is? Like, there are so many problems with the propaganda that is being propped up as news and information sharing. It's why I created my Pop Propaganda digital course, because there's just so much of it. I needed 11 hour to, you know, to 90 minute modules to help us understand how many of these techniques are being deployed on us all day, every day. That being said, I could spend a month talking about just this one communication habit and unpacking how very damaging and disempowering and how much like leverage it's gotten in the social engineering space, this one stupid freaking question, how worried should we be, posed to fake experts by fake news people. So let's break it down. I wish I had like a song or a rap, and maybe one day I will. But right now we're just gonna have a sip of water and ride the wake of that little ditty I just sang us. So again, I am resisting the urge to cultivate any self-consciousness or reticence around repeating my rap about the misunderstanding of authority, because I think it is really that important. And while we're on the topic, I see it literally just caught my eye on my home screen. And so let's do a little screen share and have some visual aid for those of us who are watching with our eyeballs. So this is actually from my Pop Propaganda digital course. And it's also part of my various quantum languaging webinars, because it is such a foundational part of the problem. Authority. We have been taught that authority means some external agency that has the right to tell us what to do. That's what Merriam-Webster, Google Dictionary, Oxford English Dictionary, the weaponized versions are going to tell us authority means. This is the actual etymology of the word authority: to do, to originate, the confidence resulting from personal expertise, right? Lived experience, what I know from my time and experience as an embodied human. Now, what I always say in my webinars and in my courses is that we don't have to think it. We don't have to overthink it. We do have to think it. Well, we don't have to do anything. It would be wise for us to think it, but we certainly don't have to overthink it. You can't spell authority without the word author. What do authors do? Authors write stories. We write our own stories. So authority, simple kindergarten version, our God-given right to author our stories however we choose. So let's say that Barry asked Douglas Murray this question in a way that wasn't blatant mind control propagandizing, And let's say she simply asked Douglas Murray, what is your take on what we're seeing as the growing woke right movement? And then Douglas Murray would give us his take from his personal authority, not as anyone above anyone else, but from his own perspective as someone who tracks culture. And then we, as the audience, we would call from, you know, we would tap into our own authority, our own God-given right to author our stories however we choose, and we would take Douglas Murray's, you know, supposedly subjective opinion, not trying to tell anyone what to do, but here's how I see this going, and then we would decipher for ourselves what sort of emotional reaction we want to have. Is what Douglas Murray is saying causing me worry? And we'll get to the deleterious frequencies in worry in a moment. Is what Douglas Murray has to say about the growing woke right movement, does it resonate with me? Does this resonate as true with me and what I'm witnessing and experiencing in my life, right? That's step number one. And then from there, if it doesn't resonate as true, we can throw it away. Now, when we throw it away, it doesn't mean we think Douglas Murray is a big poo-poo head jerk and we're gonna dehumanize him and demonize him. It doesn't mean that Barry Weiss is a moron who we're never gonna listen to again. It means, what is being shared in this conversation is not resonant with me, so I'm gonna take this little piece and I'm gonna toss it away and continue to listen to the conversation, if that's authentic, right? There are also versions where, like, if what Douglas Murray is saying is so misaligned on so many levels, like, I don't really have to listen to this person because it's not resonant with me, we can turn it off, right? But again, we're operating with my idealized version, wherein this conversation was not rife with propaganda, mind control, and manipulation, and it was just two people having an authentic, honest conversation. We would engage our own authority and we would determine what emotions are appropriate for us to be generating in response to what Douglas Murray is saying. Now, ideally, we're in neutrality, right? Ideally, we're rocking, you know, SN Goenka's perfect equanimity, and we're just filtering, okay, that resonates, okay, that doesn't resonate, okay, is there any action I can take or adjustments I can make around this? And we're maintaining a state of neutrality, right? Or Douglas Murray is saying something that isn't resonant at all, and it's like, I don't feel authentically inspired to cultivate any negative emotion around that. Maybe it's something positive. Maybe it's someone who thinks that right wokeness is the most awesome thing in the world. And maybe in watching this exchange, they wouldn't be cultivating any worry. It would be like, yay for our team. Now, I doubt that that's going to be you or me or anyone listening to my podcast. And it's acknowledging that everyone has the God-given right to determine how they want to respond to neutral information shared in the media space, right? This is what we would call journalism before that whole idea was co-opted. This is how we would be operating in a realm that wasn't infected with an inverted understanding of authority, and that wasn't indoctrinating people to be little crybaby snowflakes who are triggered at the drop of a hat, all references welcome, and who weren't also being indoctrinated to follow so-called authority figures' dictates, be they manipulative and unconscious or overt and forward facing, right? But unfortunately, you and me and all of us right now are being tasked with healing this culture. And that entails calling out the distortions and helping break down how they're operating, like Barry Weiss asking Douglas Murray, how worried should we be about XYZ? It is not Douglas Murray's job, even if he were a so-called, what, mass psychology expert? Even if Douglas Murray were by trade a mass psychology scholar or practitioner, it would still be wrong use of will for him to tell Barry and the entire audience how we should configure our emotional state. It is so ass backwards, asinine. It's why I get so like impassioned about it. Although you guys know me, I get impassioned about quite a lot of things. Of like, it's so prevalent. Like it's, I hear this really multiple times a day when I tune into the media. How worried should we be? How worried should we be? And it is infuriating to me because it is such blatant mind control and it's so effective. That's what's so heartbreaking is that it's so freaking effective. How many people have just willingly dropped the ball on their own agency, on their own empowerment, on their own sovereignty, on their own inner authority, and they're like, I'm gonna do whatever Douglas Murray tells me to do because the internet told me to. Like, that is where we're at. Cancel, clear, delete. That is where a lot of us have been at. And the beauty is that you and me and all of us are waking up to the nonsense and we're no longer internalizing these manipulation tactics that are coming through the media space. Thank you, Barry Weiss and Douglas Murray. And yes, I'm being sarcastic because I'm not grateful for this kind of mind fuckery. It annoys me. All right. So I have a challenge for you guys. I did my first audience challenge on my last Word Salad with Emily Moyer, and I was dazzled by how many people participated. So here is my challenge to you. And I learned something from it. So I made this challenge to the audience, and yes, I heard myself interrupting myself. And yes, I hear myself doing the very thing that I just spoke to in terms of the overheady speaking about our process earlier, and I'm okay with it. So Emily and I were talking about Brett Weinstein, you know, claiming that he got COVID right. And we were referencing when he podcasted, he did a few shows with a bandana around his neck and his goggles, which he was wearing to like, well, he was wearing the bandana for a while, but he wore the goggles on the podcast to demonstrate how he protects himself from the big bad boogie monster called COVID. I didn't have any sort of record of the image. So I put out to the audience, hey, anyone who sends me a picture of Brett Weinstein with the goggle and bandanas gets one of my books. Lesson learned, because I had like five people reach out, and it's like, you know, after the first time I had what I needed, and yet a promise is a promise, and I'm a woman of my word, and I promised to send books to, you know, the multiple people who responded. So I will pick from my favorite examples that you guys send to me of talking heads and media professionals asking the how worried should I be question. You can send me links, you can send me transcripts, and I will choose from my favorite. And my favorite of the bunch that you guys send me will get either one of my books or one of my products. To be determined. There will be a reward coming your way. Because I want us to start to attune ourselves to how consistently this particular how worried should we be program is running, right? Like, I don't know about you, I watch like a very small fraction of like nonfiction alt media, mostly about what's happening in the world. And so I'll go out into my local community and I'm like, why are all these people wearing masks and like acting like psychopaths? And I, you know, there are moments where I don't understand it because I am not privy to their programming and how they're being programming. So when I go to the grocery store and I see a dozen adults in 2025 wearing face muzzles. And I'm like, why is this happening? I am willing to wager that a big, great bunch of that is coming from talking heads asking supposed experts, how worried should we be about, you know, new pathology X that, you know, the social engineers are making up to control and enslave the populace. So send me your examples of how worried should we be, because we'll start to see how it's not just a culture of fear, but it's a culture of obedience, right? That's what it is excellent multitasking. And I will give Barry Weiss and the lizards who are running the sham show props for how effective their programming is. Surprise! We had another tech interruption that I wasn't even aware of during recording, so we missed a chunk and we will pick it up, and I'm sure you guys will be able to track it because you're brilliant. So any honest journalist, and Barry Weiss used to work for the New York Times, so she should know better, and I am okay with that should right there, because I'm very disappointed in Barry Weiss's blatant propagandizing. Not because I expect her to be anything but a blatant propagandizer, and I kind of wish she wouldn't be. So any real journalist, as Barry Weiss supposedly is, would know, you don't give your interview subject the answers to your questions, right? We learn this in journalism school. We ask open-ended, neutral questions. We're not leading the witness. We're not leading the interview subject. We're not trying to back the interview subject into a corner called our agenda, right? We're allegedly allowing them to educate us from their perspective without guiding them. So first and foremost, any supposed journalist or talking head or spokeshole who's asking that question is already unethical and out of alignment in terms of feeding them a negative emotion. So first and foremost, what Barry's doing is she's driving the narrative, right? It doesn't matter if Douglas Murray is read in or not, and I'm would be willing to bet that he is, but it doesn't matter if he is, because it's a subtle way of handling, right? We talked about handlers in terms of the larger controlled opposition conversation. This is a great example of Barry Weiss handling Douglas Murray. How worried should we be? She just gave him the topic of the conversation. Now all Douglas Murray has to do is give us how much worry. With a prompt like that, it's gonna be a lot of worry. Like, I wish we had a bar graph right now of like a little bit of worry, a medium amount of worry, a lot of worry, a great big bunch of worry, right? Like, these are the choices she's given Douglas Murray. And it's like, that's not an open-ended, honest, ethical conversation. You've just narrowed the boundaries of the conversation to one thing, worry. And his freedom of choice is how much worry he gets to choose from, even though her prompts are telling him it's probably gonna be a lot of worry, right? So we see Barry Weiss inserting worry into the conversation, handling her guest and getting him on board with the narrative. And here are the two like main pieces of propagandizing that are being deployed by way of that one simple question. One, fear. So fear, and I am going to pull out our very favorite slash only illustrated guide to propaganda. This is the only illustrated guide to propaganda in the whole wide world, and it was written by a real deal journalist, aka me, and it makes a great gift. It's easy to read. It's like a good little quick toilet book. That doesn't make it sound very good, but I think you guys know what I'm talking about. Fear is on page 9. Let's read about fear, because it's such a handy dandy propaganda tool. Social engineers use fear to control the populace. They do this by exaggerating the terrible stuff and suppressing the wonderful stuff. Worst case scenarios are presented as absolute inevitables that will definitely for surely happen, and that our only recourse is to be very, very afraid and to do whatever the overlords in charge tell us to do to safeguard our health and our safety and our freedom. Fear hormones shut down our cognitive capacities and make us easier to control and manipulate. That's why our media and our medical paradigm are lousy with the stuff. And it features, for those of us watching with our eyeballs, an illustration of Believe Us magazine with a photograph of the earth with X's through its eyes and its tongue hanging out in the telltale sign for dead. And the headline says, Earth Dead by Christmas, Why It's All Your Fault. So in addition to buying copies of pop propaganda for everyone you know and love, let us return to the subject at hand. So the two things that Barry Weiss is doing so effectively with this one simple question is, one, disseminating fear, programming her audience with fear. Worry. What does worry mean? If we go to the etymology of worry, which I know by heart, so I'm not going to waste our time pulling it up on the computer, which has been a little fussy today. Worry comes from the Latin, which means to choke. Why would we want to cultivate feelings of choking? Why would Barry Weiss want to program her audience with the frequencies of choking? It has come to mean something more negative, a kind of negative thought looping, right? So let's take it out of its antiquated choke, which, let's be clear, is still encoded in the word itself, and take it to a negative kind of mental masturbation. Why would we want to foster that in anyone? Worrying, I truly, guys, this is so, so common in the media space these days. Like, I'm just hearing Eric Weinstein saying it on some recent like Israel press interview he did. When we say what we want to worry about, should people be worrying about this? We are instructing people to mentally masturbate over negative worst case scenarios. That does it for the first half of today's super juicy solo podcast. I invite you to join me and our tribe for the second half of today's show, which you can find on both my Locals and Patreon communities. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month and as much as you would like to generously offer, you get access to all of my second half conversations plus oodles of bonus content. I am utilizing social media less and less and less, and I'm announcing product drops like this one only on my Locals and Patreon sites, as well as through my website, through my newsletter, which I also recommend signing up for immediately. And going back to the second half of today's podcast, you can find it over at dannykatz.locals.com and patreon.com/dannykatz. Your generous patronage doesn't just get you access to the second half of my conversations. It also really helps me in a very big way, because the media space has shifted to the point where no newspaper, no magazine, that I've yet found is willing to allow me to share my thoughts with them. And so it's really only through your patronage and your donations that this whole operation is being kept afloat. So do navigate over to Locals, Patreon, both would be amazing. Choose to support me at whatever amount feels best for you, and you will get access to the second half of this and all the other conversations. I think that does it for housekeeping. Yes, that does it for housekeeping. Thank you for rolling with today's tech difficulties. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are Omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.